All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I will include in the weekend show posting, at least a link to that website. Now, we are going to cover with Mark a bit more of a general conversation, recapping some of the data that we saw this week and some of the more interesting moves in metals and even in the markets. Plus, look ahead to next week, which is a big week for central banks around the world because there are about a dozen meetings that are coming up next week. Mark, let's start off with this week and kind of the key data point that seemed to move markets, or at least move metals, was the retail sales number. Came in on Thursday, came in strong. As we know, everybody looks at this data and really they use this data to estimate or predict what the Fed might do. Give us your little summary, please, of this retail sales number, how it came in and how you think the market and traders took it.
Yeah, no, thanks. I think that the first thing is really the context. We had a soft employment report on September 3rd, and then to begin this past week, we had a soft CPI. Some people began getting cold feet about what the Fed was going to do coming up, thinking that maybe they wouldn't taper after all. And then we had that monster retail sales report. You know, most people, most economists, were looking for the fourth month decline. And instead, it comes in much stronger than expected. Even when you exclude, we knew that auto sales were weak, but when those were excluded as well, they had a very strong number. And then there's a control function, which is market economists to calculate GDP will get data from the retail sales report, but they will exclude, because they'll pick it up elsewhere, auto sales, gasoline sales, food services, building materials. That core measure also exploded. And so what this means is that despite the softest unemployment, despite the higher inflation numbers we're getting, American consumer is alive and well. And it helped perhaps by return to school season, perhaps also the child tax credit checks began going out. These things helped retail sales, but also shot up U.S. interest rates and helped lift the dollar. I think the market took away from the retail sales report that come next week, the Federal Reserve is going to take another step towards clarifying its tapering before the end of the year. That is, the Federal Reserve will reduce its bond buying before the end of the year.
Well, Mark, another question I had for you is, you know, we've seen some weaker markets recently, even before these data points came out on Thursday. Do you think any of this has to do with that seasonality factor where September is usually one of the months that the general market struggles? There's also the sell Rosh Hashanah, buy Yom Kippur trade. And then we also have the quad witching options expiration today. So there's just so many seasonal factors as well as all those data points. Do you think that some of that just speaks to the market weakness we've seen the last 2 weeks? And could that change going into next week where we have most of that data behind us, except all eyes are now on the Fed?
Yeah, I think you raise a good point. You know, I see a lot of commentary talking about the last time the U.S. stock market pulled back by 5%, or how long it's been since we had a 10% pullback. And so I think the market was cautious. I think we've seen some profit-taking, people taking some chips off the table. I do think that this is like a corrective phase, and I think that people are looking to buy the dip, but the dip might not be over yet. I'm thinking maybe along the same lines you are, that we ahead of the Federal Reserve could be a hawkish statement. Why like play ahead of that? But I wonder if a lot of it would be priced in, so that by the time we get to the FOMC meeting in the middle of next week, the hawkishness has been discounted, and now the market then would be vulnerable to like a sell the rumor on the stocks, buy the fact. So that's what I'm looking to do. Is I have some names of companies that I think high value names pulling back here, and I'll look to try to put some new money to work towards the middle of next week.
Okay, so one thing to note, the S&P has pulled back pretty much right to that 50-day moving average, and that 50-day moving average has been very strong support moving back about 6 months here. So let's see how it reacts to that. Now, Mark, you said there's a couple stocks that are on your radar that have pulled back that you think could be a good investment opportunity. Are these in a general sector that you think could be first to rebound, or are you going to be looking at any individual sectors within the markets to give you some foresight into if these markets are going to bounce or if they're going to break down further?
Yeah, so what I'm looking at is, you know, part of the reason I think we are pulling back is the economic rationale and why we've seen some soft economic data, including some data that's not tracked by the government, but still the market follows it, like open table reservations, air traffic, clearance through the TSA in the U.S. And so we have seen a pullback. And so I'm looking at consumer discretionary sectors, and I'm also looking at CapEx, because I think that that's how companies are going to make up for this higher wage costs, higher input costs, is increased productivity. And increased productivity often means more capital investment.
That's an interesting take on it. Well, Mark, off mic, you had mentioned to us that moving into next week, there's also quite a few other central banks that have data points coming out besides the Fed. Maybe walk our audience through just all the different news blips that we're going to see next week.
So maybe sticking with the major countries, we've got the Bank of Japan is going to be meeting right around the same time as the Fed. There's nothing really the Bank of Japan can do. I mean, their balance sheet, the central bank's balance sheet, is about 200% of GDP. Debt levels in Japan are very high. I'm sorry, the balance sheet is a bit more than 100% of GDP, not 200%. But there's not much they can do. And there's a leadership election, a leadership contest for the LVP. And it looks like what we should be expecting from Japan is not so much on monetary policy, but a large fiscal stimulus package. By large, I mean they'll say it's about 30 trillion yen, which is about $270 billion. So fiscal stimulus over monetary stimulus in Japan. I'd say an interesting central bank that's not on a lot of people's radar screens is Norway. And Norway is an interesting country because their interest rate before the pandemic was at 1.5%. They did the right thing. They slashed to zero for the pandemic. But now, even though the economy is not going gangbusters, it has begun expanding again. And Norway is prudent. They say, why should we keep interest rates at zero when it's not an emergency anymore? We still might not be as strong as we were, but it's not an emergency. So they are likely to be the first high-income country to raise interest rates. So Norway is important because, you know, we all know that the central banks eased aggressively and that it's like a whole curve, like a wave, is turning higher. And it's where different countries are in that sequence. Norway is just like the queen bee in the swarm. Not that other countries will follow it because Norway is doing it, but more because this is just a trend that's taking place. After Norway, another central bank that meets next week will be interesting is the Bank of England. They've been sounding hawkish lately, and they had a high CPI report. And what the market has done is they're pricing in 2 rate hikes for next year. So the Bank of England is not going to do anything the coming week, partly because they have an income support program for labor called the furlough system, where the government subsidizes wages for people who can't get to the office because of COVID. And this program ends later this month. So really until this program ends, the Bank of England can't have a clean view on the sort of state of the labor market. I wonder, too, if maybe the market might be getting a little bit ahead of itself and expecting 2 rate hikes. You know, usually these major central banks, they move in 25 basis points at a time. But what happened during the crisis, the Bank of England's last move was 15 basis points. And so that brought them down to 10 basis points as their base rate. So the market's pricing in a 15 basis point hike and then a 25 basis point hike beginning roughly around the middle of next year. I can't imagine the Bank of England signaling that this is not aggressive enough. Partly because not just that monetary policy can't get too far ahead of itself, but remember what's happening is that there's another lever that governments are playing, and that's fiscal policy. And next month, the UK will announce its budget, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer is going to be announcing an austere budget. That is a fiscal tightness at the same time as monetary tightness. It could be problematic. So I think that One hike next year seems prudent, and at the Bank of England, a little caution about getting too far, like leaning too much ahead of our skis. Those are the Swiss National Bank meets as well, and so does the Swedish Riksbank, but neither one of those banks is likely to do anything anytime soon. In the emerging markets, I'd say, there's about six emerging market central banks that meet. Most of the emerging market countries seem to be biased towards raising interest rates. Turkey will stand out as a country that looks like they're going to cut interest rates next week. The Turkish lira is one of the weakest currencies, but it is true that Turkey is sort of an outlier. You know, their repo rate is at 19%, partly because the inflation is roughly around the same level. And what the central bank has indicated is they're going to look more at the core rate, which will allow them to cut interest rates, and the Turkish lira is being punished for them.
Mark, do you think any of these moves by other central banks have any impact on what the Fed does? Or is the Fed simply looking at U.S. data and U.S. markets to make their own decisions?
So I think the Fed sort of operates on its own. But when I talk to U.S. officials, central bank officials, treasury officials, I think that they put extra weight on two areas, the Eurozone and Japan. So I don't think the Federal Reserve really cares that much whether the Bank of Canada is tapering or whether the Norway central bank is going to raise interest rates. For them, I think that it's really about where the bulk of the market is, and it's dollar euro and dollar yen.
Mark, one other point that I just want you to touch on deals with some of the market action this week in the metals. Look, broadly, we're seeing commodities or the metal sector resources pull back outside of oil and uranium. But base metals, they're off their highs. Gold was smashed on the back of that good retail sales number. Different reasons for different pullbacks. Take us through why you think commodities broadly are under pressure.
Yeah, no, they have been, huh? It's kind of interesting, kind of timing well with China releasing metals from its strategic reserves, which we've talked about before. What catches my eye would be iron ore, for example. China has promised to reduce its steel output this year, partly for pollution and air quality types of issues. And even though steel output rose in the first half of the year, the market suspects it means that there's going to be bigger cuts here in the second half of the year. And I think in the past few weeks, past 2 weeks or so, when I say 3 weeks, that the iron ore, the Chinese futures contract, is down 25%. It's just an amazing collapse in the price of iron ore, which, of course, is used for steel. And I think that the challenge for this, trying to, like, think through the ramifications, it's really going to affect the terms of trade of countries that export iron ore, like Australia. This is partly, you know, China's also releasing some of its oil next week. I think they had the first oil auction. It's really when the market first heard that China was going to sell some of its oil, people got excited about it and took oil prices down. But they're only selling, say, a little bit more than 7 million barrels. It sounds like a lot, but at the end of the day, it's not even one day's worth of imports for China. I think that a lot of this is still, a lot of the metals is who's the demand for it. And China is still the world's factory. And the latest data suggests that the Chinese economy has slowed markedly, more than people thought. And so I think that the next big shift is going to have to be more stimulative actions from China, though it looks like it's very targeted. I see that we've had, like you say, other metals too. Aluminum's come off the boil a little bit. There's still strike activity in South America affecting copper prices. But I think that people are sort of like a bit schizophrenic, if I could say that. That on one hand, they recognize inflation pressures around the world, mostly elevated. But at the same time, they're worried that central banks tightening, even tapering, is going to choke off the recovery. I'm not convinced that that's true. I think that it's sort of sequentially, first they'll deal with the inflation, and then later policy can move to be more stimulative if needed. It's really more on fiscal policy stimulus now rather than monetary policy. Other countries are also doing, it looks like they're going to be doing more infrastructure. And in the long run, this is probably good. But I think, again, what we're going to see is other materials, green, I see more and more emphasis on green production, green infrastructure. And so this has to be taken into account too, I think.
Yeah, Mark, that's exactly kind of where I was going to ask you is like, how do you balance out some of these infrastructure bills, not just in the U.S., but in other countries with this narrative that, you know, the inflation is transitory and we had the softer CPI number? Do you think a lot of this commodity weakness, besides the China effect, which is clear, could be the inflation discussion and that people think, hey, maybe inflation was transitory?
It could. I mean, I'm sort of concerned that what happens is that what parts of inflation are transitory? My barber hasn't changed his price, and he doesn't have to compete with China or third world countries. So I think a lot of services prices might be sticky, and what will happen is as consumers shift from buying goods to buying services, we'll see that impact on prices as well. You know, what I'm watching too is that a lot of companies know that the investors, the institutional investors, put more weight on their own like internal measure of ESG ratings. And so what I see happening is as these companies, as the industrial metals type companies step up output, we're seeing that the carbon offsets, you know, people trade these carbon offsets, and these are also very expensive right now. And I think that we need to take into these kinds of things into account. Like we've seen like this huge rally in natural gas. It doesn't seem to be so much China, though China does seem to be rebuilding, which they typically do in the second half of the year, but where the energy costs have really been punishing is in Europe. And I think to your point, Chad, Europe's wrestling with this too. On one hand, the households' electric bills, partly because a lot of it's natural gas, droughts have also hurt hydroelectric power. That by hurting, I mean raising the price of hydroelectric power. And so what several European countries are doing, Italy, France, Spain, Greece, they're giving subsidies or tax breaks to households, which it's basically like they're giving tax breaks, incentives to consume more energy at exactly the wrong time. That is right. As we try to move toward a green area, this could have been a way that, like we're doing in the U.S., we're not getting people a tax break for higher gasoline prices or more or higher what it's going to cost to heat homes. But in Europe, they're really giving this these subsidies, these tax breaks, and this is, I think, one way that just we're seeing different countries wrestle with trying to with that conflicting priority. They don't want to squeeze the households. The households are just coming back from this pandemic shock. And now they got this energy shock, but yet we're concerned about the long-term future here. And so I think that different countries are making different choices here that do affect the prices.
All right, Mark, great chatting with you as always, buddy. There was actually a fair bit to talk about this week and some weakness broadly in a wide range of markets. Let's see how it all plays out next week as all attention shifts to central banks around the world and the Fed, although the expectation for this meeting for the Fed won't be much change. Mark, thanks as always for taking time with us. Great having you back on the show. Great hearing your thoughts. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. And everybody who tuned in, thank you for listening to this first hour. The second hour is going to be a replay of a lot of the important company updates that we recorded from this week as Al is taking a little break this week. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Good luck, everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.